Well, as we get ready to jump into this next section, continue our discussion of volunteers, let me just pray and ask God to bless this time again. Lord, you have told us in your word that you're so faithful. And Lord, you are much more interested in the church, your bride, than we will ever be. And so we come to you even now, just asking for you to provide men and women, Lord, who would help build the kingdom, that we would be able to witness your hand at work in their lives, just demonstrating the power and glory of your majesty. Lord, we love you. We just ask for blessings now as we talk about this. Give us wisdom, Lord, and give us insight, and give us material, Lord, that will really make a difference, that will help us be more effective as we lead a group of people to build your kingdom. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, in the last session, we began to look at this massive list of job descriptions that is presented in the syllabus. And certainly there are many, many more that we can add. The idea is that we would just begin to look at what it looks like. And we started by looking at the Sunday school team, specifically the teacher. And we were looking at specific things in this job description that talked about how they can be involved. You mentioned the fact that training was mentioned and time, you know, it's specific, and that they're part of a team. Those are significant. One of the things you'll also notice is that it's specific in the way it states when we're going to meet. The meeting time will be from 9:15 to 10:45 a.m. Now, that might change, and so you want to clarify that on your job description. It also mentions time per week. Now, I have listed for the Sunday school teacher that it will be a position that requires 5 hours a week for that session, for whatever section that he or she was participating in. And again, remember, in our scenario, it's a 6-week commitment. Now, if they say they'd like to do more, or they've got a topic that's going to take more than 6 weeks, we certainly would allow that. For instance, we did a deal based on this one group called Biblical Peer Counseling. And Michael and Sherry Coggan, who are students here, have gone through the counseling program, led that. It was a 12-week commitment because the material was going to be that intensive. And so they committed to 12 weeks. Well, where did I come up with 5 hours a week? Okay, study and preparation would be part of that, including the actual hour that they would be involved in the Sunday school. It's important to give people an expectation of how much time they should spend in preparation. Why? Because you could easily spend more than 5 hours. You could also spend a lot less. And so you want to give them some realistic picture of what that should look like in their life. I know with different teachers, I've had to say, you're spending way too much time preparing. They'll come to me and say, I don't have enough time to teach Sunday school. How come? Well, it takes me 15 hours a week to prepare for the lesson. I'm like, well, you know, if you aren't teaching it, I'm going to have to teach it. Do you want me to spend 15 hours a week getting ready for the lesson? What am I going to have to give up to do that? And suddenly they go, oh. Now, I'm not saying you should have shallow lessons, spend 15 minutes instead of 15 hours. But often you can help them tweak. For instance, if they're given handouts, if people are really into graphic arts and they're really into pretty handouts, they can spend hours on Microsoft Publisher just making it look exactly right and cool. I don't think that matters that much. I don't think that many students are going, wow, this is awesome graphics. You know, get it done, get it on paper, but help them begin to move along quickly. Another position that we have in here is the Sunday school substitute teacher. Now, what this is, and it sounds like, it's kind of cheesy because it sounds like the school. But what it is it's that basic person that whenever one of your regular teachers has a child that gets sick and they can't come, you know, they get a speeding ticket on the way, whatever, they let you know they can't come, you have somebody who's ready to go. Now, what this doesn't mean is you call them at 7:30 on Sunday morning and say, so-and-so, could you put together a lesson? Mr. and Mrs. whatever couldn't come. These people know their substitute teachers, and they already have in their file a number of lessons that they'd be willing to prepare. Now, it's probably not going to fit in to your 6-week or 12-week cycle, wherever you're at. So what? At least you're going to have a lesson that's been planned, that's biblical, that's been thought through and prayed over, as opposed to the, hey, you know, George and Linda couldn't make it. Here's the curriculum. Can you just read through this and you know, make it happen this morning? That's not going to be very effective. And so you call on them. And notice what I write here. To provide temporary assistance when a regularly scheduled teacher is unable to teach on a Sunday morning. Advance notice will be given whenever possible, but may not come until the morning of. Why is that an important line? Okay. And what did I say in the first part? We want to be honest. And so if you don't make sure that that's a reality and you call them at 8 o'clock, what are they going to say? I'm not ready. I can't do that. I didn't know. Well, the reality is you didn't know either. And so that's why they're a substitute Sunday school teacher. I would suggest having 5 or 6 of these people willing to do this. Now, how could you duplicate? How could you work this? How might this become something that builds your whole ministry team? If you take, if you have 5 teachers for each of your major sections of class, middle school and high school, they're each teaching a basic 6-week course, all right? That covers 30 weeks of the year. You can slide other people in there. You're probably going to teach some yourself. Well, it's very possible that these 5 teachers could also, at least a few of them, be your substitute teachers. They've already know the students. They already are familiar with kind of the style, and they already know your team. It's also possible that part of your Sunday school team could also be ready to be a substitute teacher. That even though they're doing worship that day, they all have a lesson filed away, and they're ready to use it. Does that make sense? Again, we make sure they understand the meeting time per week. This is easy for them. You know, 0 to 2 hours. There's not a big commitment, but the length of commitment is indefinite. You know, you're just ready to do it whenever. Any questions on how that would work? Do you see how it could be a real benefit? It benefits your students. It benefits the ministry. All right, last thing in terms of Sunday school is what we call a Sunday school team member. Would somebody read that? Steve, Martin, will you read that one for me? Oh, you don't get your notes? Okay, so that's right. To be a regular participant in our Sunday morning ministry team, your responsibilities will include some of the following. Meeting and greeting new students as well as regulars, participating in small group discussions, helping to provide positive atmosphere, engaging students in conversations, just connecting with them, participating in and or leading mixers, games, skits, etc. And again, I mentioned training will be provided. This is the core team of people that really is going to make Sunday school great or not so great. And it's not always going to be the teacher. That's an important component, but so is all the rest of it, because it will fit in with your vision statement. Like ours says, for instance, bring students into the body of Christ. Well, if students come for the first time and there's nobody there to greet them, encourage them, help them, the first impression that they have is going to be bad. If they walk into a room that's messy, which ours often is, if they walk into a room that's messy, disorganized, cluttered, youth unfriendly, it's not going to be a positive experience. You will not have the time, nor should you spend all your time trying to do all those things when there are people who are willing to do that. You know, the last few weeks, we just started serving breakfast in ours, trying to just give it a little more juice, no pun intended. And as I began to buy breakfast, I realized this is not a good use of my time. I need to find somebody else to do that. Now, this doesn't even have to be an adult. It could be, but a couple students said, we'll be happy to do that. And so now they're the ones going out getting breakfast in the morning. I think it's great. It's using their gifts. They're bringing in the stuff. And I'm not rushing to Deerberg's to pick up juice on Sunday mornings, etc. So it's a good thing. Any comments or questions about kind of the Sunday morning deal, what that would look like? Okay. Let's look through some more here. The name of our youth group is Crew. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a name that they inherited. I inherited when I begin to be involved in that ministry. But it's kind of the name of our youth group, and it's also the name of like our outreach events. And so we have things like Crew Outreach. Our middle school is called CRASH. Doesn't, again, there's no acronym. It's just those are the names. You either like them or you don't. But that's, it used to be Crew and Zoo, and I didn't like the name Zoo. So I let the middle school team develop their own name, and they came up with CRASH. Again, you'll notice that there's a specific job description. To participate in our special outreach meetings, this is for the outreach part, which take place at various times during the school year. Your main involvement will be to build relationships with students who are not interested in Christ or the church. You'll spend time along with other leaders hanging out with students at sporting events, practices, lunches, performances, etc. At the outreach meetings, you will participate in games, skits, mixers, etc. Do you see how specific that is? It helps people realize that, okay, this is what's expected of me as I participate in this event. It's not just, hey, come be a part of youth group. Now notice what happens in most ministries is the same people doing the Sunday school work are the same people doing that. I'm not saying it's all bad, but can you begin to understand how many hours a week that you're going to be asking people to give? Some people have that kind of time, and we're excited about that. but a lot of people don't. Some people that would be excited about teaching Sunday mornings or being a part of that Sunday school team, which is more centered on edification, growth, etc., will not be that excited about doing outreach stuff. The idea of going to a high school football game and talking to a number of students you don't even know actually can be very frightening to them. If it's frightening to them, they're not going to want to do it. And so again, it's specific. Meeting time, Monday nights. That's when the meeting is for about 8 to 10 weeks in the fall or spring semester. Time of week commitment will be 5 to 8 hours a week. Length of commitment, we ask people to commit for 1 year. Usually they stay and do it even longer. But again, it's kind of specific. What are some things you notice in that job description that would help a volunteer determine whether or not they would want to do this job? Okay. Are there things in here that you could negotiate? We talked about earlier negotiating with leaders. Now, I don't mean the sense of, oh, no, yes, but I mean, could you change some of this in order for a person to be involved? Sure. For instance, going to sporting events or being involved in skits. You know, I've got some leaders that don't put me up front. I never want to be up front. But does that mean they can't do outreach? Absolutely not. I mean, probably the best people are the ones sitting on the floor with all the students just hanging out. And so it's very, very critical. It's important to me for our leaders to know that not every leader has to be that. And the description I just read is the stereotypical volunteer. Most people in your church think when you ask them to volunteer, you're asking them to do that which I just described. And that is just not where everybody is. And so we need to be careful about how we recruit. The next thing we'd look at is our small group teams. We call nurture teams. And they lead what we call lifeline groups. Can I get one of you guys to read that? Again, to look for the specifics. Yeah, go ahead. Read loud. Okay, again, you see specifics where people can go, oh, I'm not really into the outreach thing. It makes me scared to go hang out with high school students. And Mark, it actually makes me scared just to be around you that much. Can I have a small group on my own? Yes, that'd be great. And this is what a small group would look like. The key line, again, is you will be trained. You'll go through that experience so that you're not just thrown in to a group of high school students. And again, the meeting time varies because some meet on Sunday nights, some meet on Wednesday nights, some meet on Tuesday nights, you know, whatever. And the time per week, again, is 5 hours. Well, suddenly you begin to realize that for 5 hours a week, you can have a significant leader impacting students' lives. It's when we only give them one option. Hey, you want to work with the youth? Great. What do? You do all this stuff. That's why we fail to recruit the kind of leaders and as many leaders as we could. Does that make sense? When you begin to break this down, suddenly you're going in and saying, okay, we have lots of options. Lots of options. People come to me all the time. Well, how can I work with the youth? Well, I have lots of ways. This is just 39 examples. And I'm not going to read through every one of them, but I want to go through just a couple more. Notice the crash outreach and nurture team are pretty much the same as the crew. I've mentioned the administrative assistant person already, as well as database program. One thing I want to mention is the marketing team. You have people in your church who specialize in different businesses. And you can utilize their strengths. That line I gave you a few minutes ago, organizations are perfectly designed to get the results they get. Came from a woman in our church who's an executive for Procter & Gamble. I love to spend time with her talking about organizational structure. Why? Because she's brilliant. She has her master's. That's what she does. My master's was in divinity, not in organizational structures. My bachelor's was in sociology. I don't even know what that means. And so here we are taking care of all this stuff. I need to go get people who are sharp and gifted in their fields to give me advice and give me insight. Guess what? I call that person a team member. I say they're on my team because they're participating. And it's exciting for our volunteer team to go listen to them talk about vision and organizational structure. And so for marketing, here's an example. Help develop and produce flyers, posters, mailings, videos, t-shirts, and other tools for marketing our youth ministry and youth programs and events. Now, I think some of this stuff is actually very cool. We just bought a $5,000, you know, two big computer screens, audio, video, you know, whatever, editing machine. It's phenomenal. It would take me 700 years to learn how to use that thing. One, I'm not that computer literate. And I'm just looking at it going, wow. Now, I love what it can do. But the last thing I need to be doing with my time is learning how to do that. When I've got a host of people that love gadgets, they can't wait to come in there. Now, they're not always the most creative people, and so they need somebody who's creative to kind of give them ideas, but let them run. Let me give you an example of how all this works so far. Last Wednesday night, we had an event called Knee Football. Knee Football, it's not a new event. Youth groups, Young Life, people have been doing it for years. But for whatever reason, in our city, in our section of West County, St. Louis, it's a big event. Kids come from all over the place that we've never met. And every year we learn about how to do things better. For instance, it's very specific. It is designed, and we talked about this in the beginning of the course, it's designed for the spectator. It's not even designed for seekers. It's designed for the spectator. Those who don't even want to come into a church. They just kind of drive by, they spectate, they see things. This is a very, very, very friendly event. And so they come. The guys are on their knees. The girls are standing up. It's tackle football. It's hilarious. It's chaos. It's basically a human dog pile for about an hour, and it moves. It's kind of exciting to watch. Well, there are certain things we can do to make it great. One, we can register the students. But most kids who are just spectators don't really get excited about filling stuff out. So what do you do? Well, we brought a team of marketing people together. Not like people that we hired, just friends. What can we do to make this event exciting for people? And they said things like, we'll make a video, promo it, come up with t-shirts, all this kind of stuff. Well, suddenly, they get excited for the vision of what this event could do. I tell them, we'll have 100 new students come to this event. Now, out of those 100, maybe 10 will come the next week, or maybe 50. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. It'll be exciting. They catch a vision for it. Suddenly they're saying, well, I'll help produce the flyers. I'll help produce the brochures. We'll make this thing look sharp. Well, what will it take to make it look sharp? Somebody says, you need to videotape it this year so the next year to promo it, you have a great video promo. All right, well, I don't need to be videotaping it. I need to be on my knees tackling people. That's my gift. That's where I need to be in the trenches having fun. Would anybody be willing to do it? This lady says, no, I wouldn't, but I know who's good at it. Who? My husband. Oh, I've been thinking about how to get your husband involved. I say that silently. She goes, he would love to do it. Are you sure? Yeah, should I ask him or are you? She goes, I'll ask him. Okay. She asks him. He comes out. He takes the video camera and does a phenomenal job taping the whole thing. Guess what? As he's taping, there are students who come up to talk to him about stuff. Suddenly he's talking to him about this computer program. Oh, do you know we have this kind of program in our church? Yeah, this is great. All of a sudden, guess who's sitting in the office yesterday at the computer after he got off work? Well, that gentleman, along with a couple high school students. Guess what's happening? Relationships are forming. Who is he going to see on Sunday morning when they're worshiping? The kids are looking across the pews. They're going to see this gentleman standing up. And they're going to say, oh, that's our friend. Again, the 3-to-1 ratio I've been talking about suddenly is becoming a reality. Because when we go on our retreat, in 3 weeks, I'm going to ask that guy, would you come up on Saturday afternoon? It's 45 minutes from your house. And would you do some more videotaping? He might say no, but I guarantee you he had so much fun. He's going to say yes. He'll also come tonight or tomorrow night and watch what his video looks like as the students sit around going, wow, that was pretty cool. And he knows now this is going to be a tool he'll use next year. I spent 0 hours with it in terms of actual production, but spent a little time recruiting and a little time on the creative side. Again, I mentioned here specifically, the meeting time will vary. Time per week is random. Length of commitment, project completion. Do you see how specific it is? All I want you to do is complete this project. You never have to do anything else again in the history of our youth ministry. But if you do this one thing for me, it would be great. But the chances are he's going to do more. As you flip through these pages, you'll see more and more the list of all the different things. Couple more that I want to mention, and if there's any UC you want to ask me questions on, please feel free to do. Room decorating. Some of the people in this course will have a flair for that. You know, you just look at things, you love it. I like things to look nice and neat. I think they're cool, but I am not good at decorating, and I'm definitely not good at keeping things clean. When we spill an egg on the floor from, you know, the egg blow skit where you're blowing eggs at each other, it doesn't bother me. Okay, you know, Stainmaster, good. You know, hopefully there's a tarp down. It doesn't bother me the way it should. I have leaders that bothers, and so, you know, they yell at me and tell me to get on my knees with the Borex or whatever and clean it up. You know, we got Comet going. We're having a great time. I like it when the chemicals mix and there's smoke coming up. That's kind of cool. You guys with me? But I just don't get too uptight about the way things look, but a lot of other people do. I don't like it to look messy, but it's just in the heat of the moment, I'm not worrying about it as much. And so I need people who are, and there are lots of people who come in, they get excited about decorating a room, taking care of it. We have a pretty cool room, and I had very little to do with it, and that's probably why it looks cool. High school girls are the ones typically, who are getting passionate about what the room looks like. And so we get them paint, and we let them go. Now, we don't just let it be a free-for-all. We make sure they have some level of skill, and we make sure they have the appropriate resources. But we always find an adult who's willing to help. There are going to be people in your church who love remodeling, decorating. They will be excited about helping with the project. Again, what happens is they see this one task. If they're doing it by themselves, you failed to capitalize on the opportunity for ministry. Because if you can throw three or four girls in there working with some woman, all of a sudden, conversations are going to start happening as they're painting. Relationships are going to form. And suddenly you've got another leader. Now, she might not formally be on your leadership team, but I'll bet you it won't be long before she begins to realize the kind of impact she can have in these girls' lives. Because she'll hear things as they're painting that are going to break her heart. Back to Kathy Spielberg, administrative assistant. I talked about her earlier. Kathy does that job, but she does so much more now, just personally investing in students' lives. Different students will come along that just grip her heart. I think I might have mentioned this earlier in the semester when we were backpacking through the Rocky Mountains in Colorado a couple summers ago. Kids started talking about the food and how hungry they were. Did I mention this? And somebody said, we did that really dangerous thing. What would you guys eat right now if you could eat anything? You know, I'm thinking steaks. I'm thinking restaurants. And one girl named Sarah says, oh, I would love a bowl of Miss Spielberg's stew. Well, her son Paul was there, and then it just unraveled. Everybody starts talking about how great Mrs. Spielberg's food is. When we got back from Colorado, Paul had called his mom, and his mom had a feast prepared for us. And these kids came into her house, and she began to just unload all this food on us as we're eating. And kids are telling their stories. There's a couple of kids in that group that Kathy's heart just broke for. And now she spends time with them. They've actually graduated. They're in college now. And she spends time with them whenever she can. Writes them. You see what's happened? She's moved from administrative assistant to a key contact leader, really investing in people's lives. She just came to me. She would hate for me to tell this, but I'm going to anyway. And wrote a check just to cover two specific boys' spots on our upcoming retreat. Because her heart is connected. And remember the principles. You're called by God. Because you love them and you have a burden for students. That's all your volunteers need, those two things. A new one that we're doing right now is called a scrapbook ministry. How many of you guys are into cropping? Do y'all know what I even mean by that? What is cropping? Does anybody in here sell it? Yeah, a lot of dudes. It's a great way for lots of different people to make money. Well, we had a lady in our church come to me and say, you know what? I don't know if the high school girls would ever be interested in this, but, you know, I sell this stuff and I'd be willing to give kind of a discount, Maybe make it a fundraiser. Well, I looked at our vision statement, and I thought, well, it could fit in here a little bit, but you know what? I'm not really seeing this as a fundraiser. So I went back to her and said, listen, I don't care about it being a fundraiser, but you know what I would like? I would love for you to do it, allow the girls to come, I'll get a couple of leaders, and let's make it a ministry where we're putting together these photos, but conversations taking place as we do it. Let's do it twice a semester. She said, okay, wasn't her original idea. It's better. This lady's named Kathy also. She comes to our house. My wife, who loves this cropping stuff, gets out all of her supplies. And then maybe 10 to 20 girls come over, and we spread out all over the living room floor. Well, what's happening? They're talking. And as they're talking, Kathy isn't worrying about helping us raise money. She's just having conversations. And suddenly, there's going to be a girl or two on a Sunday morning that sees her and begins to associate with her and connect to her. Again, the 3-to-1 ratio is beginning. Do you see how it's working? Most of these were born out of things that I don't really enjoy doing, or things I really enjoy doing, but I don't have the time to do as effectively as somebody else were in the class or in our ministry program helping. And the list goes on and on. Any questions about these different job descriptions? Comments? I look at them, by the way, just so you know, it's never fully done. I don't have, you know, 150 volunteers doing all these different things. As I read through them, I go, oh, I really need to build in this area. But I know that that's a starting grounds. And I encourage you, use them. Use these sheets. Go to people. You could tweak them, do whatever you want, but don't feel like you have to. You know, it's not copyrighted. It doesn't matter to me. Just say, hey, these are some things that you could do, but tweak them to your individual situation. Well, in the last 20 minutes or so, I want to kind of run through a couple of other things regarding volunteers. Now that we've talked about our expectations, we've talked about job descriptions, I want to talk about training of the volunteers. This is an area that I think is tremendously frustrating for a lot of volunteers. They just don't feel like they're very well equipped. Often we promise them we'll train them, but the reality is we don't have that much time. And if you're looking at a team of 30 or more volunteers, boy, it's going to take a significant amount of time. Imagine if you did one one-on-one a week with your volunteers. You couldn't meet with your whole team twice a year. That's just reality. And so you've got to think strategically about how you train them. You need to develop training materials for each job description. Now, it doesn't have to be packaged beautifully. There are lots of things out there already. But for each job description, you need to be thinking, well, what resources am I going to be able to give this person in order to help them more effectively do the job I've asked them to volunteer for? U Specialties puts out some books that are they're somewhat helpful. I'm a small group leader. Yeah, is it Help? I think it's called Help. I'm a small group leader. Help, I'm a middle school director. They need like volume 1, 2, 3 for that one. Help, I'm a Sunday school teacher. Now, these are real simple things. They're less than a page long. You can read the whole book in probably 14 minutes. But, you know, they cost like $5. Grab a box of those, and anytime somebody joins, just throw one at them. Or take a list of things on there. Certainly give credit to U Specialties. Don't create this and try to republish it in your own name. But just throw the ideas out to people. Give them materials. Set up periodic training periods for new leaders. Utilize things that are happening in your area or your region through organizations, you know, whether it's a denominational deal. One of the things we're getting ready to start in St. Louis is kind of a regional network, not just for PCA youth pastors, but for the whole community, kind of through the seminary and other things like that. So really encourage you, pay attention. There's a lot of things out there. Look for resources on the internet. Contact other youth groups. Find out what people are doing to train others. Invite youth leaders from other churches to come and do a 3-hour workshop on whatever. You could probably say the same stuff to them, but the fact that he's not you will make him a professional. That's just the way it is. Bring him in. Let him say all the things you want him to say. Have new leaders start together. One of the greatest things, and I think I mentioned this a little bit last week, is that the way we bring people in to ministry is absolutely critical. I told you about my experience when I was told, oh, just come. And I walked in and the kids were there. And I felt very uncomfortable. And I had been doing it for years. Well, just imagine what new volunteers feel like. Typically, the young college student isn't that intimidated. Often they're there for wrong reasons anyway. They're there just because it's hard to let go of high school. But if you bring in a 45, 50, 60-year-old person, they're going to have feelings that are very, very interesting. And one of the worst things you can do is just say, show up. Whenever we bring volunteers in, I make sure that that night I have absolutely nothing to do with the program. I'll delay a volunteer coming to an event by weeks in order for me to be completely available to sit with that volunteer when they come in. And so what I'll typically do is try to bring more than one in at the same time. So I might have Barry and Karen and Chris, and they've all gone through training at some level during the summer, and they're ready to join. But I realize the first 3 weeks of the fall, I'm speaking, or I'm in charge of worship, I'm in charge of something. And so what I'll do is I'll tweak it where I've got interns or leaders who are equipped to lead the ministry so that I can just walk in with those guys, introduce them to students, talk to them silently while things are happening. For instance, I'm sitting here, and they're watching as these kids aren't really listening to the talk very well. And they're kind of perturbed by that because they're going to be teaching. Are the kids always this disruptive? Well, sometimes. But there are tricks. There are things we can do to get their attention. And we'll talk about that a little bit. Man, that was a pretty gross skit. Are all the skits always going to involve, you know, blenders and nasty food to drink? No. But look at the kids' faces. Do you see how they're laughing? Yeah. You know, laughter breaks down barriers. It really is important for the gospel to be presented this way. As I'm sitting there talking to them, I'm able to engage the question and feelings they're having right then instead of them taking their own mental notes. This is out of control. It doesn't seem to have any purpose. I'm not sure I like this. This is not exactly what I thought it was going to be. And they're a lot more comfortable, especially when all of a sudden you're introducing them to kids and kids are coming up to them. Hey, are you going to be a new leader? What's your name? You know, I mean, you feel good when that versus if you're not with them, they probably won't even go up to the leader. And they'll be sitting there feeling really uncomfortable. And they'll slowly just keep backing up towards the wall. And then you'll say, oh, did you have a great time? Well, actually, no. It was one of the worst experiences of my adult life. And then you're like, okay, probably didn't recruit him that well. Any questions on that and how that would work? It's going to take time for you to organize it that way. But the payoff will be huge. A couple of other things. Don't rush the training period. If you're really needing leaders, you're going to be tempted to rush the training period. Don't. You can't. Help them to know what your expectations are again. Help them to know how to do their job. They'll thank you for it, and they'll last a whole lot longer. Provide resources continually. Budget that. Most of you are not going to have very big youth budgets. So utilize other people. Utilize a library. Figure out ways to get resources for people. I'm convinced if you call certain youth organizations and you say, my budget is this, they'll be happy to cut the cost for you. Just be willing to make that call. I know we would do that, and I know other organizations would as well. I mentioned properly initiating them already. One thing I want to mention there is listen to their fears and anxieties. And again, this isn't a sales job. They're either called or they're not. If they're not called, they won't be there, and that'll be good. But listen to their fears and anxieties. And Moses was afraid. He spoke to God. God listened. Listen to what their anxieties are. And don't always have an answer. Don't just simply jump back and, oh, you'll be great, you'll be great, don't worry about it, you'll be great. Tell them, yeah, you're probably going to encounter that. It's going to feel awkward. Kids aren't going to really be that interested in the fact that you're the vice president of this large oil company. They're going to be interested if you're interested in them. You know, those kinds of things. Let them know. All right, last section I want to cover then is how do you keep volunteers volunteering? I think that this is one of the greatest statements of the health of the health of a youth ministry is when they have a volunteer team that isn't just large, but it's filled with people who have been consistent for a long time. Why? That's great indication that they really are called. That this isn't just a sense of, I'm here to serve the church, do my duty, and I'll be done. Checklist. I did my year with the youth ministry. Okay, I got lots of jewels now on my crown. It's a sign of, I feel called, and everything in our ministry is working. They understand the vision statement. They understand why they're needed. They understand how to use their gifts and why they should use their gifts. So, here's some suggestions. First, be professional in everything you do. This doesn't mean be polished, but it means have integrity, have purpose. Be strong. Don't wait to the last minute to ask leaders to do something. That will kill them, especially if they're the kind of people that really like to have a plan. You might not be. My wife and I are great examples. We were asked to do children's church a few weeks ago. And it's just one of those deals that it just kind of kept slipping by. And then it was Saturday evening, and we were relaxing. It's kind of a date night. And she said, we need to look at children's church stuff. I said, I know. We'll get to it. And finally, we decided that we wanted to watch a movie and relax and enjoy each other's fellowship. And we did. After the movie, my wife, Christina, said, all right, we got to go work on children's church. I was like, well, how long do you think we're going to need to do this? And she said, well, now to have in mind, she was an elementary ed major. It's probably going to take the next couple hours. And I took the curriculum that they gave us and said, honey, I'm going to take over. I'll take care of children's church. You're going to be dead. You're going to be up till midnight cutting out all these things. And we were asked to do it at the last minute, so it didn't matter. But she's going to be cutting out everything and making it perfect. I just looked at it and said, God, we're going to do our best. This will be fine. Christina, I've got it covered. And so we went into it. She was fine. She trusted me. It would have been a lot different and a lot better if she had put 2 or 3 hours into it. But what would her Sunday have looked like if she had done that? She would have been up till 12, 1, getting up early with the baby. The other kids, it would have been ugly. And so we didn't feel real appreciated that we were asked to do this at the last minute. They knew weeks advance they needed somebody. So your volunteers are going to feel that too. You've got to be able to know when to not ask them to do something if you've waited to the last minute. Even with Kathy, who's been volunteering for 5 or 6 years, I don't. If it's last minute, and she knows me pretty well, she knows what's going to happen. There are times I go, not going to ask you to do this. You know, this will blow a circuit, and then she'll be done forever. So be careful. Be professional in everything you do. Explain your plans in details. If you're not good at doing that, find someone to volunteer who is. This is one that people don't do frequently. I don't know many youth ministries that do it ever, actually. But I think it's absolutely critical. And it's not very fun on paper. but it's absolutely critical to the process. That is, evaluate your interns. Now, when we think of evaluation, what do we think of? See? Yeah, to see where they need improvement. Typically, we think negative. We think, okay, I'm going to get criticized. And how can you criticize people who are volunteering their time? You should be grateful. Absolutely. The evaluation process simply be an avo, your gratefulness, but to also they can more effectively use their gifts. Now, there's ways you do this and ways you don't. Have a process of evaluation, but they're not very good at it. It doesn't have to be A, B, plus, S, minus, unsatisfied. And I base it on their job description, not just simply something that's universal. Show tremendous grace. Know your leader. What can they handle? When is the right time? You don't have to evaluate the same time every year. Just show tremendous grace according to their job description. Give gentle but precise criticism. For instance, I know you use Kathy as an example a lot today. You're going to meet her. We might have saved money using a different bus company. So I'll say to her after a trip, you know, Kathy, did you check this one bus company? No, I didn't really check that one. Oh, okay. Let's do that next time because we might get a better price break. You know, that doesn't hurt her feelings. She simply, oh, I thought you only wanted one. It didn't matter. But no, we really ought to probably get maybe 5 or 6. Let's do our best to do that. You see, that's precise. That's a simple thing that she could do. I don't just say it like that. I certainly talk about thanks for getting the bus company. Thanks for doing all these things. But it will help things be more effective. Offer suggestions for improvement, again, in a precise way. Allow them to share how they're feeling. Definitely. Before, after, during the process, allow them to really talk about how they're feeling about their job. Typically, I'll start with that question. Well, how do you feel like things are going based on your job description? Almost always, the person will tell you they know whether they're strong or weak in an area. Sometimes not perfectly, but you'll then have them introducing the topic. And then you could talk about it. I would study evaluation. I would talk to people who you know who are good evaluators and learn from them in the process of how to do it. And then ultimately, you want to pray with them. I've never had a leader ever quit because of an evaluation. I've only had leaders say thank you. Now, under their breath, they might be saying, I hate you for this. But I don't think so. I think deep down, they're being, you know, blessed by the opportunity to grow. You know, some things that I've made comments to leaders before is, you know what? It looks like lately your lessons, you seem really hurried. You don't seem like you're really into the lesson. I'm like, ah, thanks for noticing. I mean, it has been that way. Well, tell me, what's going on? Why has it been hard for you to kind of prepare and be invested in it? Well, and all of a sudden they start unloading all the things that are going on in their life. That's a poor evaluation of me because I should have known. Now, sometimes they hide things. But I really should know personally enough what's happening. Does that make sense? And so it's just a relational thing. That's why it's so healthy. A couple more things. Encourage them frequently. I've mentioned this a lot. Write them notes. Buy them gifts that have special meaning. Take them to lunch or dinner. Publicly recognize them. You can never do that enough. And I don't mean, you know, don't make them uncomfortable with it, but acknowledge the things that people are doing. If that doesn't become a joy in your heart ministry, you're not called to be a leader. You've got to be willing to really give affirmation to people beyond your own desire. I mean, when the Sweethearts Banquet goes well, I may have had something to do with the first year, but it's all Kathy's show now, and she does a great job. Have students share their appreciation. One of the things that I like to do is have a surprise leadership night where the leaders come, and I make them work hard. It's funny, like they expect to be doing this huge event, and then all of a sudden it turns on them, and it's actually the students who are going to pay a great night of just affirmation to all the leaders. The cool thing is, the week that they've been planning so hard to pull off now becomes what we're going to do the next week. And it's already planned. So they get all this affirmation, and then they get a whole week to rest because the other week's already been planned. Pretty cool. Works well. Leaders love it. Encourage parents to express their gratitude as well. They won't do it if they don't know who the leaders are. So you need to make sure parents know who they are. And give them some suggestions for how they can initiate that. A couple more. Hold them accountable. Don't assume your leaders are doing well spiritually. The question, how are you? How are you in your relationship with Christ? Those are really important questions that people don't ask that often. We need to be asking those questions. Don't just assume because they're a good teacher, that they're faithful, that everything's going well. You need to be asking them how they're doing. Hard questions. You give them good challenges and demonstrate tough love. I've mentioned already to provide ongoing training and host regular leadership meetings. This is one that lots of people like to talk to me about. When do you meet with your leaders? This is not a rule. Our model isn't necessarily the only one. But I'll say this. You need to have a regular time to meet with your leaders. If you don't, there won't be a sense of your greater purpose being accomplished. You'll just be very disjointed. What's going to create, or what you're going to feel, is that these people are already given so much time, I really can't demand much more out of them. Well, you need to set the cause for your mission as high as possible, because it is. It is the highest cause. Ministry, called by God to go out and serve and love these kids, is powerful. And so you need to be raising the standard. It's going to require this amount of time for us to be together to pray and go through training. The way our leadership works is at 5 o'clock every Sunday afternoon, from 5 to 6 or 6:15, our leadership team meets. Not every leader participates. Only those leaders who are heavily involved in contact work. That means meeting with students regularly, whether one-on-one or going on campus. They come together for a time. There are lots of other leaders that do kind of the behind-the-scenes stuff that aren't required to come to those meetings, but they come to other meetings that happen probably twice a semester. So 4 or 5 times a year, we'll pull everybody together. But in terms of this, the people who really, in a sense, are on the front lines of the trenches, we meet every week. Why? We need it. We need to be reminded of the fact that this is God's ministry. It's His hand at work. We need to be encouraged. It's challenging. It's hard. Those kinds of things. Last thing I want to look at is what I've listed here. Top 10 reasons why youth ministers struggle to get volunteers. So we're going to read them, starting over here to my left. You'll read number 1, and these aren't like in terms of priority, and then I'll maybe make a comment on a couple of them. But first reason why youth ministers struggle to get volunteers, say it loud.
They don't pray.
Remember that. God told us in His Word, ask for workers. We need to pray. God, will You provide? Be specific with the needs you have, and watch God unfold before you. Just an amazing plan. It's beautiful. Number 2. They don't ask. They simply don't ask people to help. Number 3.
They don't know how they will use them.
Again, that's why we created this list of job descriptions. This can inspire you to begin to think about a lot of other job descriptions. Then you'll know exactly how to use them. Number 4.
They are afraid they will be exposed.
What I mean by that is, the more people you have working with you, the greater number of people to know what your weaknesses are. When our leadership team started getting big, I think my insecurity began to really grow. Well, why? Because people realize, you know, Mark doesn't do this very well. Mark doesn't do this very well. Mark doesn't do this very well. Yep, you're right. You're right. You're right. Thank you. Oh, yes, you're right. Thank you. That's the reality. But if you can laugh about it and not take yourself that serious, you'll have people coming in. Well, why are you volunteering on this team? Well, because Mark stinks at administration. Hey, that's the best way to say it. That's the way the job description should look. Because I stink at this, I've asked you to do this. And people will laugh and have a good time. Don't be afraid of being exposed. You need people there to help you. Number 5. This is especially true of younger youth ministers and sometimes single youth ministers. Just kind of intimidated by adults, and the more people I get, you know, I don't want, again, it's the exposure issue. I don't want them to really see these things. Don't let that be true. Let your team be filled with adults from all different ages. All right, number 6. All right, the youth ministers have no vision or plan. No overall vision for the youth ministry. No plan to accomplish that vision. And therefore, no real plan. They know they need volunteers because all youth ministries have them. They ask for them, but they have no plan or way to use them, and therefore they can't get them. Number 7. All right, this is the Lone Ranger mentality, and often they're right. It would be easier to do it myself. However, you can only do that for so long before you hit burnout, and you are robbing people of the opportunity to enjoy their gifts in the kingdom. And you are seriously, seriously confused if you think you're the one who really can do all these things best. God only made one. God is Jesus. He's the only one who is perfect in all these things. You are not. And if you feel like you are, the first thing you need to do is say, what am I bad at? What am I not good at? Because there's a list of things. And right there is where you start going to look for people. It's not wrong to be poor at administration. It's not wrong to be bad at keeping a room clean. It's not wrong to be poor with finances. It's wrong to be sinful in any of those things. And one of the ways you're sinful is trying to pretend you're good and not getting any help. All right, number 8. Yes, here we go, number 8. And what I mean by that is they don't look for leaders in the right places. One of the worst things you can do, I think, is to stand up on a Sunday morning in a pulpit and say, "Hey, I need help. Anybody that's wanting to help with the youth, come forward." I've done that. I talked about that last week. It's certainly okay if you've got specific job descriptions you're willing to put people in. But the best way, again, is to go through other people. Who do you know? Ultimately asking God to provide and pursue. Number 9. This is why they lose leaders, because it takes a lot of time. Again, we're playing with the ratio, which I'm going to continue to unfold, of 3 to 1. The old school number was, well, if we could have one leader for every 5 students, that would be great. I'm convinced in a covenantal model, we need to be thinking of 3 leaders for every 1 student. Therefore, if you have 50 students, you need 150 leaders. Now, people are going, that's nuts. It's not nuts. When you start thinking about parents, ultimately, parents should make up at least 2 of this 3, okay? If you begin to think about the whole church and all the people who are out there with all these gifts, they can help. But you've got to be willing to help them develop. Even parents, developing their skills to connect. And the last one, number 10, Steve. All right, and what I mean by that is it's very easy to constantly be whining about the fact that you don't have enough help. And you whine and you complain and you blame it on these things, when in reality, it's not really that issue. It's just your unwillingness to really pursue, to really pray. Now, this, in a sense, could come across as, wow, it should be so easy to get volunteers. It's not. God also told us in His Word that we should ask for workers, but the workers will be few. You will feel strapped continually. You'll go through seasons where God's just going to always remind you that He's in charge, that you really need Him. Being in St. Louis is a real privilege because of Covenant Theological Seminary. We have lots of students coming through the doors of this institution as well as through our church. Therefore, we get a lot of different leaders, but those leaders don't stay forever. 3 years, 2 years, 4 years, something like that. So there's a rotation. Constantly has me crying out to the Lord, provide. This summer, our leadership meetings on Sunday nights, the one that starts at 5, had around 28 people. Those are 28 people working with the youth. Contact terms. There's a number of other leaders doing the behind-the-scenes stuff. But right now, on Sunday nights, there's about 12, something like that. Well, a lot of college students came back for the summer, but we also lost a host of seminary students that were helping. Does that mean our ministry's in danger? Not at all. God's in control. But it means that, again, I mean, I'd rather have 28 than 12. I'm in a position of, Lord, provide. We need the workers. And going through the steps. So this is not a syllabus or this handout that says, oh, once you arrive, it's perfect forever. This is an ongoing process that will occupy some of your time. A lot of your time. But it's so worth it. Because what you'll do is you'll be able to experience the fact that God is as interested in what He's doing in your volunteers' lives as He is the people that they're ministering to. And that will change your heart as well. And it's a beautiful thing. Let's pray. Sweet Jesus, we just give You thanks for each of us most likely had a volunteer, a youth ministry volunteer somewhere in our life that really made a difference. Lord, I thank You for Jim and Tom and my own life, who really were just such great examples of godly men. Thank You for the work that they did to show me the gospel. Their faithfulness, Lord, was amazing. I pray, just giving You thanks, when we ask for each of the ministries that we're involved in now, whether it's in this class or on videotape, that You would really encourage us in the ways in which we can find people to work with in this calling to pursue young people with Your gospel. We praise Your name, and that name we pray. Amen.